To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
What's up, everybody? You know that song. You know that voice. That's right. It's your boy, Rook. Joining me, as always, is the grease in the wheels, the man behind the curtain, the wizard of two dimension. It's Don. How you doing, buddy?
Well, hello. That's some introduction.
Joining us today is, I got to tell you, she sent us an embarrassment of riches.
Yes.
So many different books to look at. Everybody say hello to Phoebe Xavier.
Hi, everybody.
Phoebe, thank you so much. I mean, you really sent us so much material to read, and I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to read all of it with life chaos and everything, but what I read was fantastic. Tell us a little bit. I understand now the publishing company, 123 Go, is that your publishing company?
Yeah, that's me, and it's more of a brand than a company. I don't have it formally incorporated even as an LLC or anything, but it's just a brand that I have developed with some of my friends.
Nice. So what brought you into comics? Where did you get started at? What brought you to the point that you started getting everything out there for everybody?
Well, I mean, I was very young when I got into comic books. My mother gave me her old collection when I was three or four. I got definitely an initiation into old 60s Superman, Lana Lane, Lois Lane, Lana Lang books. Jimmy Olsen had his own book back then when my mother was collecting.
But
Witching Hour and some other of the Marvel horror books that went back that far. So those were the first comic books I ever read. And then later in childhood, kind of got into the X-Men. But for a long time, I wasn't working on comic books. I was, as I mentioned a few minutes before we went on air, I was doing music more actively. And it got to a point where I kind of put the music aside and started focus on writing. I already did a lot of writing, but writing specifically comic books.
Nice.
So
it was 5 years ago. You asked 5 years ago, I think.
Okay, so 5 years ago is when 123 Ghost got started?
Yes.
Okay, cool. The stuff you sent in for us to check out, a couple of them were individual issues, a few of them were more anthology books. You're working with so many different people. You're writing, editing, lettering books. You're kind of you got your hands in everything. You're doing it all, huh?
If I could draw, I would, but I'm just not that talented with the drawing.
Yeah, I'm the same.
So yeah, I do all the rest, and actually, I kind of learned to letter as a way of saving money. It was I already know how to do some graphic design work in GIMP, so I might as well, apply that to doing the letters on my own books.
Nice. With lettering, it's always tricky and strange, and I know there's a artist, Voltaire, up in New York, that his first comic book, he used this absurd, crazy font that was super hard to read, and he said that was the biggest lesson that he learned in comics. Are you getting that kind of rough lessons as you go through as well?
I definitely am a lot better now than I was when I started. There were some things, if you even look at my lettering on the first book I ever did was Sidereal Apogee number one.
Yeah.
And compare that lettering to anything I've done in the last year, it's massive, massive improvement.
Go ahead.
Yeah, as far as the lessons learned, I was very fortunate to be friends with Eddie Headington. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's out of the Pacific Northwest. He passed away this last past year. But he was someone who I knew as an underground letterer that sometimes I would show him my work and he would tell me how bad it was. But a great guy to know because he wouldn't pull any punches. And so I did learn a lot of the most important things about lettering from him.
Lettering is something like a bass player in a band. You don't really notice it unless it's not good. They can make or break something. I didn't read your stuff in order, but I could see a progression of it. Well, you know, I read in the order you sent them in, but I did notice that I never complained about any of it, but some of it's okay. It's really nice now.
Thank you.
I have to admit, I read almost all. I've got two more. You had one issue, you sent us 5 and 6. I read 5. I was just getting ready to read 6 and realized what time it was. And there's another title I haven't read. I've read all the others. The first thing I'm going to say, you're a master at pulling a fast one. Because there were 3 stories that you wrote. One was in 13th Moon. It was the anthology book, Escape Pod.
Yes.
When I finished that one, I was excited to read the next issue. And I thought, wait a minute, she didn't send me another issue for this. And then I started reading more and realized, it ends. You left me wanting more. It was a short story. I'm trying to think of the next issue. The next issue was it was done in black and white with some color. The character's hair was colored. It was a band, a performance, and they were... Well, I don't want to give it away for people to read it, but you were putting...
Game Face? I think that might be Game Face.
Yeah, it was Game Face. Yeah. That was another one I read. I got, Phoebe! That's all I kept saying. Because I was waiting to read more, thinking, okay, she's going to... No, it's a finished story.
There's more to that character. Aurora Flox, the girl with the pink hair in that story.
Yeah.
There's a few stories that she's in. She's in Sidereal Apogee number 2 and 4, I think.
Okay,
So in the Game Face story, yeah.
Okay, now, that one you just mentioned, I read five. I've got 6, but I haven't gotten to that yet, so okay. And that one you just mentioned, that's another one that kind of caught me. The stories are unique, and they're all different. They're all different. And you have a vast array of artists, different styles. When I'm reading it, I feel like I'm back in the early 80s when you started getting, Pacific Comics and the Eclipse and all kinds of stuff. It's kind of exciting. Different levels of abilities, but I enjoyed them all. One question I do have... The Citadel Apogee and Game Face, there's in the first issue of The Demons, the guy that was in heaven that came, Jeffrey Haas wrote. Yeah. They were in black and white with some color. What was the decision on that?
Okay, his first appearance was in Gunmetal Black Ops number 1.
Yes.
And then we gave him his own book after... So actually the way Jeffrey Haas is the author of that, and Jeffrey is a very brilliant writer in his own right, and he runs a podcast as well, I think, Footsteps Through the Stars or something, Trek Through the Stars, I don't know, but he interviews TV and comic book people as well. Mm-hmm. But Jeffrey's initial version of the Moloch story, I think, had Moloch dying at the end, and I was like, no, let's change it. Like, it's only a quick 8-page story. Let's kill the devil. And so after we changed it up for Moloch 1 at the end, then Jeff came back to me like a month or two later and was like, hey, I have an idea for a Moloch series. And when I heard the full pitch, I was like, all right, let's do that. This is a really good idea. I like his direction with it. So, but initially, that first story was... Okay, I work in black and white sometimes, or black and white with the color accent, I call it.
Yeah.
Like 95% at least black and white. And that's really a cost thing. That's it's cheaper to just do pay for line art. Or even cheaper to pay for grayscale sometimes. So, the artist, you said you read number 5 of Stereo Apogee?
Yes.
Okay, so the artist on the first story, that's Mumu SF. He's from the Philippines, I believe. Like, his full page rate is like over $100.
Okay.
I cannot buy 15 pages off of him easily at that rate. But if I can pay him for his black and white rate and then, you know, just put a couple color accents in and it still looks beautiful, then I can put out a good comic book without, you know, forfeiting my lunch money.
Right.
It's mostly cost efficiency.
Okay, it's still, I wasn't sure if that applied anymore, because sometimes in printing, you can now, I remember business cards, you could get one color, if you got a second color, it went up quite a bit. If you got a third color or fourth color, it went up through the ceiling. Now you can get business cards printed in as many colors you want with overprint, no extra charge, it's different. But I enjoyed the comics in black and white once in a while. I'm from the time that undergrounds were all black and white. A lot of alternative comics were black and white. I never saw black and white as an absence of color. You know, sometimes it's nice to see, but I really enjoyed the color accents on these stories that you did. That was, to me, a neat touch.
Thank you.
So, Phoebe, you mentioned that one guy's from the Philippines, another guy was from the Northeast. You're working with people from all over the place then.
Oh, yeah. So there are a lot of really good Facebook groups that are designed for linking up artists with writers or artists with artists or just comic creators in general. And there's actually like a really good ecosystem of underground independent comic book creators that none of us are really that famous in our own right, but like we know about each other's work because we support the underground scene in general.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
And another thing that I do, and why my team is as diverse as it is, that we're from Africa, Asia, Europe, South America, North America, is because sometimes it's a lot cheaper to work with somebody in Thailand or in the Philippines or in, you know, Bolivia or wherever, that like the dollar goes a lot further there. So I don't feel like I'm cheating anyone by offering them less than the American average page rate. I know they're still paying their bills off the amount of money that I'm able to send.
Right.
That's cool.
I saw one of the books you started, and it was a writer from Africa that wrote the next issue.
Yeah. He wrote the second Jade Lion and Black Cauldron story.
Yeah. Nice.
We have another one of that coming out in Gunmetal Black Ops #4. Those girls will be back. Those ladies will be back. And Gunmetal Black Ops #3 is actually going to be done hopefully this week. I'm just waiting on one edit to come back to me. Then I can publish that one.
Nice. So now, are you kickstarting stuff? Are you publishing off of residuals from previous publishing? How are you able to manage right now? How are you doing as far as getting the books out?
A lot of times it's just straight up out of pocket. We did do a Kickstarter for 13th Moon Volume 1, and we tried for Volume 2, but we fell short. I was still in St. Pete when we were trying to run that one. And I was canvassing for Richie Floyd, who I just helped get elected to city council in St. Pete. That's what my job was as I was trying to kickstart. But that one failed, and it kind of soured me on the idea again. It's just like, wow, it's so hard to do this. But Jeffrey, who I mentioned before, the creator of Moloch, he does a publicist work now as well. Mm-hmm. I think he set this up. Jeff set this up. Jeff does publicist work for people that are doing Kickstarters now. So I think when our next new book, it's called Viking Saga of the North, it's historically accurate. It's not like a fictionalized version in any way. It's just information about Vikings explaining the age in about 40 pages. So I think we're going to kickstart that one. And I think I'm going to have Jeff schedule me like 30 days in a row podcast every night, so I know that we're very, very well promoted throughout the blogosphere, the podcast sphere.
Ooh, nice. We're going to have to talk on that one because I happen to be very interested in all things Nordic mythologies. My favorite thing to do is to take apart idiotic white supremacists with their ideology about Norse mythology.
I have Mjolnir on my arm. I do have a tattoo of Mjolnir, but I don't have any white supremacist views or anything.
Yeah. Well, no, trust me, as I said, we look into who we talk to, and you wouldn't be here if you did. But no, it amazes me with that content, how many people don't understand and just manipulate it, and well, like most things, they just don't understand what the mythologies say and some of the real deep rooted meanings behind things. It's like I said, it's a pastime of mine to find the Nazi at the punk show and make fun of them and make them understand that, hey, guess what? You're not understanding what this stuff means.
Yeah. So also just Norse mythology in general. If you have a deep understanding of the various stories, then you know that Thor was a cross-dresser.
Thor was a cross-dresser. Loki was gender fluid. There is some very interesting dynamics between Odin and Loki, relationship-wise, if you look into it. Not to mention, one of my favorite things to point out to people being a redhead is that, you're carrying this neo-Nazi concept with you, but Thor was a redhead, and Odin at one point states that his hair was a fire like Thor's in his younger days, but then Hitler wanted to exterminate the redheads after he was done with the Jews.
Dang. Yeah, yeah.
So, y'all might want to think about that.
No, I love Norse mythology. I love mythology in general. And I don't know if I sent you any of my modern mythology work, but I was part of a book called Modern Mythology that we retold stories, myth stories in a modern context. And I did Beowulf in the first edition. And then in the second edition, I did Three Sisters, which is an Aboriginal myth.
Right. Was this prose work?
This is comic book anthology. It was run by Caleb Palmquist, and it was run through Kickstarter, and it was successful for both volumes.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm going to have to hunt that down. I want to read that.
I was surprised.
Send you the PDF, for sure.
I was surprised at the amount of work, like Rook had just mentioned. It was completely out of my line of sight, but you have a site where you can buy all your work, which it will be linked to the blog. But I was really surprised, one, the amount of it, and the vast array of it, the variety of it. It was
We sell through Indie Planet, which is the online division of Kablam, and they're located in Orlando. They're an incredible company. They're comic book creators themselves. But their Indie Planet service is brilliant because it's print to order. So if you go on there and see one of my books that you want, they don't have them sitting there in a warehouse waiting to be sold. When they get the order, they print it and send it.
Yeah, that's the one I saw. You can find all of her books on it. It does say print on demand. Mm-hmm. So nice.
We do. So I guess we have a cyberpunk book, Sidereal Apogee. We have a espionage book, Gunmetal Black Ops. 13th Moon is our horror anthology. And so Trouble is my superhero book, even though she's in a sci-fi world. It's really like a comedy / superhero story. And then Moloch is a horror story, a horror war story almost, because he's like, getting all the legions of hell together to go to war with heaven. And we have a little bit of diversity. And the I picked up the Viking Saga one because I just saw, like I mentioned before, these Facebook groups, someone published, printed that, like, oh, I have all these great drawings for my comic book. I'm doing a Viking comic book. Would any publisher want to work with me? And I was like, well, let me see what you got. Like, and he had brilliant art, but not a lot of cohesive narrative put together yet. And I was like, that's okay, I'll work with you on that. We have a raw like talent that just needs to be shaped a little bit, directed a little bit, and it's going to be a great book by the time it's done.
Awesome. Awesome. Nice. So you're working with people who are new to the industry as well, then?
Most of the people are, if not brand new, relatively new, or at least understanding their place in that, hey, we're indie underground artists. We're not like, we don't expect Dark Horse to turn around and be like, hey, let us pay to put your book out. Like, we're not anticipating any sort of hopes for a great break just through our indie books right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and we've said this on the show before. I think that the indie books, you're finding much more compelling and interesting content in the indie stuff these days than anything the major labels are producing. And I just really feel like Kickstarter is just like it's amazing how many people are out there doing awesome stuff and creating these books that are so interesting. So I really just love the indie comic industry as it's going right now. It's amazing.
It is a lot of fun to be part of this underground circuit as it is, but I'm still waiting for my chance to write the X-Men. If I ever get to do that, I'll do it.
Nice.
But in the meantime, I'm quite content to be the underground editor-in-chief, writer, letterer that I am.
Awesome. Mm. Awesome.
I just want to talk about some of the titles. Like you mentioned 13th Moon. That was the first one I read. It was kind of surprising. The first story in it is the cover story as well as Lucy and
the Doombringers.
It was done in a fun style, but basically, it's the character Lucy is in hell. I think she's the devil's daughter.
Yes.
And she doesn't like authority. She ends up getting out of there, and she joins a band.
And that'll be.
I really enjoyed that, and for some reason, I was thinking, well, okay, this is the tone. This is what it's all going to be. It was fun. It was over the top. But the other stories in it, I was really surprised were different. Again, that's where I think Escape Pod was in that one.
Yes, am I correct? Yes, it was.
And I think you had four or five stories in it, if I remember. But
I think there were six in that one, yeah.
Oh, six. Each one was completely different. Escape Pod was, you know, it's a horror anthology, but Escape Pod was in space.
Yeah,
and
I think of that as like a Black Mirror style sort
yes,
of thing.
Yes,
it's very much science fiction, but it's also a horror story.
And, you have such a diversity of work. It's awesome. I mean, anybody listening right now, you guys really got to check out her work. I mean, there is really something for everybody with what you're doing, and I love it.
Thank you. This book, 13th Moon, that we're discussing is actually for free for digital download at indieplanet.com/123. So, yeah, anybody listening that wants to read that one, you can read it for free, digital download.
All right. Nice. That'll be on we have examples on the blogs. So we'll have a couple of page examples, and then we always have links, so you can go see that one.
Okay.
One thing that surprised me in these stories is some of the technology you have in it. I mean, it's not like the story's built around it. It's just like there's technology that I'm not aware of. Putting your consciousness into another body. Cyborgs. I mean, cyborgs around, but it was interesting how you wrote the cyborgs. The one main character, and I forgot the name of it also. We mentioned it. It was a black and white story.
The City of the Apogee ones, yeah.
Yes, yeah, you know. Where the general was talking to her sideman, and she was making him breakfast, but she couldn't eat anymore because that's past. I thought, wow, I don't think about these things. It was really interesting. Well, go ahead.
That character, Camille Dontremont, she appears in Sidereal Apogee in like two of the three stories, with the third story sort of based on breaking her out of her orbital prison. She also appears in Sidereal Apogee number 2 and a short story that I wrote called Grasshopper. which explains when she first met Dr. Adamus Ivanakis, who is also in that story.
I saw, I went through so many things trying to put the blog together and prepare for this episode that everything's kind of
muddy. Yeah, like I said at the beginning, you sent us so much stuff. It was awesome. We've never had anybody send this much content to us before. I mean, it kind of sucks that we haven't met you before and gotten to talk to you before because you have so much going on. Right. It's great.
Well, did you guys do St. Pete Comic Con last month or whatever?
Say what?
2 months ago? St. Pete Comic Con?
I was going to go because St. Petersburg has never had one. We've had them in Largo, Tampa. Never had one in St. Pete, and I was excited. I was going to go. My daughter was excited because she was going to go, and she's, Dad, we've never been to a convention together. No. But it's when Omicron was coming out, and I thought, I don't know. So I hated to do it because I wanted to go and I wanted to support it, but I just thought this is too irresponsible. Usually people get sick at the convention, and I've never gotten sick, but I didn't want to get anybody else sick, so I bowed out. But I'm hoping I have another one.
Awesome! Yeah, I think they're doing it again next year.
Did you go?
I had a table like ready to go, but then I had to leave St. Petersburg before it happened.
Oh.
Yeah. I was in North Carolina for Christmas and New Year's. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But so I also have a collection, a short story collection. It's called Superliminal Latency. It is not quite done yet. I mean, it's all done on my end, but my editor has it. And when my editor returns it to me, that's when we're going to publish it as an ebook. And I think you might find a similar range of diversity there that you guys might be interested in that. I'll send that to you when I have it done. It's got horror, sci-fi, and also the development of a genre that I've been working on for years, which I call horror porn, which is horror but very pornographic as well. Mm-hmm. And it involves graphic sex, graphic drug use, and graphic violence all in like one story. And so I have a number of horror porn stories in that book, and regular horror and regular sci-fi cyberpunk sort of stuff. Well, when we have it.
Man, you're doing all kinds of work out here. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've been working a lot the last 2 years too. So working in restaurants, so that soaks up a lot of my time too. Mm. But I do. I like to. Maybe I'm a little ADHD in the way that I work on like six or seven things at once. That I definitely have. Several books going at once with several artists, and maybe like some of them might take 3 years and it might be like, hey, it's taking us forever to get this one done, but that's okay. And if it gets done, that's what's really the objective. And so some years maybe we'll release more stuff because it just happens that's when a lot of the work got done. But this year we're going to have two issues of Gunmetal Black Ops drop. I know that for sure. And we're working on 13th Moon Volume 3. Volume 2 didn't come out, both because the Kickstarter didn't succeed, and also because my computer died right when I got here to Nebraska. So when my computer died, I lost like 2 months worth of work. Included a lot of delivering for 13th Moon Volume 2. So we will work. I'm paying $800 when they finally get my data out. It's going to be like $800 to get my data back, and that's when we're going to put Volume 2 out. But Volume 3 is in the works right now, so we're going to have Volume 3 launch by the end of the year as well.
That's one thing with we keep talking about the variety of the work. It does have a... Everything's vastly different, but it has a cohesiveness to it, I guess, because you're involved in all the projects in some way, if just editing or overseeing. I think it's kind of important. But
I was much less involved in Santa Claus. Did I send you Santa Claus?
No, I'm not aware, unless that's one I haven't gotten to yet.
No, but I heard you talk about it on another show, and I went looking for it.
Yeah, that's Jeffrey Hotz's book. And him and Joe Wong, the artist for that one, mostly did everything. There was a couple edits at the end that I sort of redid lettering for. I arranged those covers with Moo Moo SF. But yeah, I had very little to do with the two Santa Claus books, but everything else I am kind of heavily involved.
Right,
yeah.
in different levels of it, but I can see your fingers on all the different pieces.
That's me.
I lost my whole point of thought. Sorry about that.
Go ahead. Yeah. Want a beer over here? It's all good. No worries. So yeah, nice weather up here in Nebraska for a change. I'm sure you guys have had like 80 degrees all through February and March.
No, it's been nice.
It was beautiful this weekend. Yeah. It was like 60 something all weekend.
Yeah, yesterday and today was overcast, so it's kind of like living in Washington State. It's still warm, but you know, no, we haven't had the unforgiving, bone crushing heat and humidity that we usually live through. But
yeah, really like the thunderstorms down there too. Thunderstorms in that region, yeah. I can just like get a good nap in the afternoon and listen to thunder.
Oh, you would have loved last night then.
Yeah, it came through last night.
Yeah. So what's the future hold for you as far as with 1-2-3 go? Are you looking for new artists and writers to hop in with you?
But also like it depends on like the certain artists I'm paying a lot of money for certain pages, like and other artists are only getting paid in copies of the books once it's done. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of depending on a person's level of like how far into the industry they are, kind of. Right. If they know that they can go out and sell their artwork, take someone else's script, turn it into a drawn page, and get paid like $150 a page, cool, go work, you know what I mean? Right. And there's work out there for those people. But you know, if you don't have the chops to sell your shit for $150 a page, but you still have enough artistic talent to draw and draw up something that I would publish, then yeah, come talk to me. I might put your story out, I might like want to heavily edit it, but I might not have a ton of money to send people like that at this point, at least. That, but yeah, I always want to give somebody the opportunity to tell a story or, you know, draw if that's what they're trying to do, and I see their talent as something that I would publish. There have definitely been people that have pitched me either ideas or shown me art that I was like, I can't put that out. Like, and keep drawing and writing stories. I'm not telling you like, oh, you suck and don't do it ever, but you're not good enough that I want to publish it. So
yeah.
I do have to make that determination sometimes. But yeah, if someone's like just trying to put a story into Gunmetal Black Ops is always open for submissions. It is an espionage spy related anthology. The stories don't have to be related to anything. Everyone retains the rights to their own characters, and I would send finished copies to artists or writers involved in a project like that. Sidereal Apogee is mostly written by me. I've written every single story in the first six issues. Jeff Haas did a story in the graphic novel version. But I kind of had to work hand in hand, coach him on like what it's like in this universe, like what it would look like on Mars in this year or whatever, and what technology would be normal to them or abnormal to them. And Sidereal Apogee number 7, which is the next one that we're working on currently, are my friend Andy Luke, who's a member of 1-2-3 Go in, I think, Ireland. I believe it's in Ireland, North Ireland even, if that's like two different places.
Yes.
And he, I believe, lives in the North one then. And he wrote a story, a 15-page story, about Hardik and Sendo. I know that they were in those Sidereal Apogee books. It's the guy with the like, pointy hair and his like little clone partner,
yeah.
the girl, the 10-year-old girl with a cannon that's just as big as she is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those two, I have him writing a story called the Sugar Skull Shootout, and it takes place on one of the moons of like Jupiter or Saturn.
Nice. So you've got a whole expanded universe when it comes to Sidereal Apogee.
Yeah, I wrote a whole like 135 page half of a novel that like was the me sorting universe building, mm-hmm. and then once I had gotten that far into it, I had lost like the energy to keep going in that particular book at that time, but I was like, I have all these characters they just killed off that are fucking awesome. Let me write some stories about what they did before I killed them off in the beginning of this book. So that's what the first couple of Sidereal Apogee stories were. It was me like exploring the history of characters that I had just killed in this half-written novel.
Right.
And because the half-written novel really well painted the picture of what the solar system could be like in the year 2450.
Right. I have a question. I'm kind of embarrassed that I'm asking this question. I read, you know, Sidereal Apogee number 5, I think it was. We were just talking about it. Is that the same artist all the way through, or is that three different artists?
Three different artists. And as I wrote on the cover, like in the top part where it would say The Uncanny, if it was the X-Men, whatever, I wrote three stories stretched across one glib witticism, I think it says. That the first story is called The Smoking Gun, and then the second story was right behind the no smoking sign. So it's like that one little sentence is what holds the whole thing together, is the titles. That's the one glib witticism, is the smoking gun was right behind the no smoking sign. So the second story there was drawn by Frederick B. Roseman. He's from Mississippi, and he is the creator of Jay Lyne and Black Cauldron, the girls that star in a lot of the Gunmetal Black Ops stuff. Frederick is very talented. He also worked with Christopher McCulley, who is, I think he's a full-time resident of Canada now. I think he got his residency there, but he was from Scotland and had his wife from Canada, so they were going back and forth. I think they're fully in Canada now. And Chris works with Doc Ray Stoker from the Bram Stoker whatever you would call that lineage. Chris has a thing called the Stokerverse with a Doc Ray Stoker.
Yeah.
And so they were Dracula stories, and Frederick, who did the second the art and the second Sidereal Apogee number 5 story, he did the comic book drawing for some book that was like half narrative and half a comic book drawn. So that's another thing that Frederick did. Frederick is another... Me and him have a story coming out in Gunmetal Black Ops number 4, and it is the another Jay Lyne and Black Cauldron story. They're in Egypt, and it's called In the Shadow of the Sphinx. And so he's got, I think, 2 pages of that done so far. It's an 8-page story. And this one for the plot, I don't know if you read either of the stories with those girls yet, those ladies, but they're sort of like kind of joking around while they go through these assassination jobs that they do. They like, you know, they're both they're a lesbian couple, but they're also like deadly killers, and so they make it fun. And so I have them doing Tarantino quotes through this one, and just finding interesting, fun ways to sneak in a Tarantino quote while they're killing soldiers.
I read both of the copies you sent of those books, and that fascinated me. For some reason, I was thinking the second issue was a different artist. It turns out it was the same one. It just had a different look to it. They were strong. And that's one where I started noticing you really kept that story moving. I was surprised. It kept pulling, again, it kept pulling the rug out from under me on both of them. The Sidereal Apogee... the reason I was asking was three different artists. The first one had a distinct look, and the other two, I couldn't tell if they were different artists, or if it was just the other one was playing around, you know, with the style. It wasn't...
It was
It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't. Sometimes, how many times have you read a, say, X-Men, and the artist changes writing, you know, the next issue?
Sometimes it changes on a page in books like that. Like, if they can't get, like, a major book out, and they're like, we're only, like, a page or two, they'll pay another artist to fill in several pages.
But sometimes it's shocking. It's not pleasant. You know, like, oh, man, this, you know, it pulls you out. I didn't feel that way reading this. And again, the story, after the first part, when I read the Nexus, wait a minute, is this a different story? Well, it has the same feel, and then at the very end of the issue, it pulled it right back. I saw, here we go, I'm going to the next one, and then my wife told me the time, oh, God, I got to go get started. That's why I was late, so.
So the way that works, though, too, so if you got to the end of issue number 5, where Camille Dontremont is escaping from the orbital facility, that's how issue number 2 of Sidereal Apogee begins. It begins with her sort of punching her way out of the escape pod she used to escape from that orbital prison.
Right.
And then it goes from there. So that's another aspect of how that series goes, is it isn't chronological necessarily. But it all happens, it mostly happens in the 2450s and 2460s.
And they have corporate war dialogue through it, which I find really disturbing.
In the first story, with Camille and her sidekick or her first lieutenant or whatever it would be, Carrie. I forget his last name right now, but Carrie is his name, and he's the one that's like an android that has modified his body so he looks like sort of like a monster.
Yeah.
But he's totally a human. Like, he is a human. That we mentioned before, that he's the one that can eat. His body still needs food for nutrition. Turns this an android body. Oh, a good one, if you've never seen, or if you ever do binge watching, it's called Altered Carbon.
Yes.
Altered Carbon deals with that transference of, like, your consciousness from one body to another, or, like, into a robot or synth body or something like that. William Gibson's latest trilogy, with The Peripheral and Agency, they also deal with that a good deal, transferring a consciousness into a not necessarily a human body, but a synth human body or an android or machine kind of. And I get a lot of my ideas from other science fiction. Not everything that. Like, you've mentioned a couple things like that were kind of an interesting approach to technology for you that I'm like, I might have read that like in another cyberpunk story.
I've read stuff like what you're talking about and other things. I guess what I liked about these stories were you didn't over-explain it at all. It was just something that they did. And I guess to me that's what caught me was, it's like if you lived in the world, you just kind of pick it up. To me, that's an art.
The over-explanation of what seems regular and mundane in a universe that you're reading in takes you out of it, and you don't do that, which is is a fantastic thing. I really have to say.
Well, that's what you're just saying. I'm going to add on to that. One of my favorite comics in the whole world was Fantastic Four when Jack Kirby and Stan Lee did it. Absolutely. And but they would, even though they showed you stuff, they left things open to you to interpret. You know, and John Byrne, who was an artist I loved, and I loved his Fantastic Four run.
Yeah.
But what I didn't like was he would over explain, and he would take ideas that were done in the original run, but he would try to pound it into your head what he thought it was, which, you know, a lot of people tend to over-explain. I'm not bagging on anybody because I did enjoy reading it, but there is an art to telling the reader enough of what they need. You know, if you go to Primitive Man, they may not know how to build a car, but I don't either, but you can look at it and kind of figure out how to run it. You know, you see somebody start it, push the pedal, turn the wheel, you got it. And that's kind of how I took it when I was reading the book. When they start talking about, and it was in a few stories, the game face, how you know, mind transfer come? Well, look at that. Okay. It was very nice. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
That one does have like the sort of M. Night Shyamalan switchback sort of effect that you're like, wait, this story did not seem to be headed in this direction.
Give yourself more credit than M. Night Shyamalan, because his twists are so predictable.
Oh, I like him. I'm tired of people bagging on him. I like his stuff.
I sat him at a restaurant in Philadelphia. I was a hostess there. That I sat him for Mother's Day dinner like a year ago. Yeah, he's actually a very nice guy. Yeah. But I like a bunch of his movies. I haven't seen them all. I'm not obsessive about it or anything.
Yeah.
But one of my approaches to writing is actually the ending is one of the most critical things. The two things that I have to have about a story before I start writing is I want a cool title. I have to know what is this, I want to have them wanting to read it just based on what the name of it is. And then two, I have to know how it ends. And as long as I have those two things, I can build from a first sentence to that ending. And then you just fill in a bunch of details in between. Maybe you have to delete some of those details later because you overwrote you got too verbose and explain shit that didn't need to be explained. And then, but that's why I'm grateful for the editors that I work with. Joseph, who's editing my narrative fiction, has really taught me a lot about cutting words out and cutting, it's changed the way I write. I start to write something and I'm like, wait, Joseph would just edit that out. And so I correct it myself now before I send it to him.
Right.
Yeah,
you're learning as you go on. You're improving yourself, and that's experience. That kind of leads me to another thing. Do you approach things differently? The work that you're overseeing on the Citadel, that one sounds like you have a plan of what you're wanting to do. But say some of the other ones you talked about, somebody brings one into you. How do you approach that? If they have an idea and they,
If somebody wants to pitch me an idea for a espionage or spy story, you can email me at phoebexavier@gmail.com. And I put Gunmetal Black Ops in all capital letters, Gunmetal Black Ops pitch in all capital letters in the title line. And I would also say... that you can download issue number 3 of Gunmetal Black Ops on indieplanet.com 123go /123go for free right now, as well as 13th Moon are both free digital downloads.
Nice.
So I mean, if they're going to pitch the book, they should probably take a look at what we kind of put in it.
You want to know what you're pitching to, and keep it in the realm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Are you reading any current comic books that's being done now?
Not really. The only thing that I'm reading I mostly read other friends of mine's what they're writing lately. I picked up some older X-Men stuff lately. I picked up Batwoman because I had an awesome cover with her and the Joker as the Joker card flips. It was a really good cover. Yes. So I picked that up. I haven't read it yet. It's still tucked away with 10 other comic books. So I accumulate them slowly, but I don't even necessarily read them. One of the last ones I was excited about reading was I got one of those amalgamated ones where DC and Marvel made a collection of the two universes. I picked up an issue of that somewhere that was kind of fun to read. But I'm not really reading any current comic book writers. I read them on Twitter a little bit. I see their thoughts and their opinions, but not their comic books. I don't have the time to read stuff like that necessarily.
Right.
And I am obsessive about current events and globally, nationally, et cetera. So I spend a couple hours a day just learning what's happening in the world. So I don't have as much time to devote anymore to reading stories. If I have comic books in my life, they're going to be ones that me and my friends are making.
Mostly. Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a question I have to everybody that writes comics. What made you go into comics instead of just writing prose?
Well, I do both.
Right, I understand. And, but what made you want to come in and create comics, per se?
Having written them all. When I was 20 years old, I was dropping out of college, and I wrote a bucket list because, like, I kind of wanted to, like, say to myself that, okay, you don't, just because you're not going to finish your education at this point or whatever, higher education, there are other things in life you can work on. And one of them was getting involved in hip-hop music, but the other one was write the X-Men. And as I phased working on music out of my life is when I start to work more seriously on comic books, because I still have it on my bucket list to write the X-Men. So I don't know if I'll ever get to do that, but like the fact that it has drawn me into writing really fun, cool stories and creating whole universes, and not even that, just like generating, holding a space for other people to get their early work, you know, in at, like for Frederick B. Roseman to be able to bring Jade Lyon and Black Cauldron to life, or for Jeffrey Haas to be able to bring Moloch Raining Devil to life, like other people to put their cool stuff out. I'm happy to be able to do that. And so yeah, I fucking love what I do with comic books, and I will continue to do it as best as we can.
Right, I got you. You mentioned X-Men twice, wanting to write it. My next question is there a particular X-Men you would like to write, or would you just be willing to write whatever the current X-Men is?
My favorite X-Men right now is Blank, Clarice Ferguson. She's my favorite X-Men. She has been for a while, but the, like, back when I was growing up, Wolverine was definitely one of my favorite X-Men, but I wrote Chris, my friend Chris McCauley, who I sent colors for us. He also wrote a story. Yeah. He wrote the Dracula story in 13th Moon. But Chris, I think at some point, I forget what he was doing for Marvel. He was coloring like Transformer pinups or something for them. And so I asked him, I wrote a pitch. I was like, hey, if I write like an X-Men pitch, is there any way you can get that like on the desk of the person in Marvel who's like the X-Men editor or whatever? He's like, I mean, I can. And what he said was, I could ask my person, who's my editor, to maybe email it to that editor. And I was like, sure, do that if you can, please. So I don't know if like the X-Men editor ever got to read it, but I pitched a 4-issue limited series that would have been Blank and a alternate reality version of Alpha Flight, and it was. I had Purple Girl. I had the Dream Queen. If you remember who the Dream Queen is, she was a villain that did some crazy, crazy graphic, fucked up shit in Alpha Flight Volume 1. When she came to Earth, she was just a really gory shit. Like, there was like, wow, you could do that in a comic book. But the Dream Queen, I have her as a good guy in this version of Alpha Flight. And they're not called Alpha Flight. I think it might be Delta Flight that I called it or something. I had a fun. I wrote like a four issue pitch synopsis for a version of that. That's the type of shit I might try to get involved in if I got to write for Marvel. Definitely would involve her. I bring back characters that I liked when I used to read it, probably,
right.
And maybe that was their whole scene, because I know they have all these new weird Squirrel Girl characters that I don't like, but so be it. I'm this crabby old lady. I'm going to be 45 soon. Like,
still a baby. Still a baby. That's the reason I was asking, was the X-Men has changed. I mean, I don't know any of the characters you just mentioned.
There's another. There's the Brain Girl or Girl Nobody Girl, with a girl that's just a brain in a jar.
Well, I think so. Don, Blink came into prominence in X-Men through Age of Apocalypse, which you've heard me talk about endlessly.
You talked about.
Then she was on the Exiles team, kind of dimensional hopping. Awesome character. She's fantastic character. I really love Blink too. I had her action figure for years. I don't know what ended up happening to it. I think my son took off with it.
The version of that was portrayed of her on that show, it was kind of like The Gifted. It was like sort of supposed to be the New Mutants, but yeah, The Gifted is what they called it. That their version of her was really cool. The version of Thunderbird on that was really cool. They put in a couple of characters that was like really cool to see these mutants for the first time portrayed in a cinematic version.
Yeah. Yeah, I like The Gifted show. It got canceled pretty quick, unfortunately. It was it was a good show. At least I thought so, but, you know. I also thought Firefly was a good show, and it got canceled after one season.
A lot of people thought that, yeah.
Man, we've talked about so much stuff. I mean,
right.
Have you ever seen the show Almost Human?
I've heard of it.
So, I'm a huge Carl Urban fan.
Yes.
So, yeah, I watched that. I was really annoyed when they canceled that one, too.
Have you canceled that good of a science fiction show after one season? Like, no. I need more Almost Human.
Well, haven't you heard the joke that Carl Urban is, like, the death kiss to anything? I mean, he's such a fantastic actor, but yes. Everything he gets involved in, like, kind of falls off.
Grant is still doing fine.
Yeah. AD 2000
is still doing fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I really like him as an actor. He's really good.
Carl Urban.
Nice.
We might actually get to see a direct to streaming Judge Dredd 2 starring him.
No way, really?
It's been a lot of conversation across the net. I think it was last week. He's like, oh yeah, I'm in, totally want to do it. So,
do they start that, or do they actually have like a studio behind it?
I think it's all conversation at the moment, but I would totally back that Kickstarter because he was fantastic as Dredd. You know, he embodied the Dredd character fantastically with just his mannerisms, the costuming of that movie. He just did a great job. I really think it was a fantastic job.
That movie was much better than the other one, but in the other one, Stallone wasn't really a bad Judge Dredd. It was just that they put like Rob Schneider in it or something. Mm-hmm. Like every other with John Leguizamo or Rob Schneider or something.
Yeah, it was Rob Schneider, but he took the helmet off, and I think that's what annoyed a lot of people. A lot of people were super annoyed by the fact that he like took the helmet off, and that was one of the big things. I remember when they announced the Carl Urban movie, they were like, "Was he going to leave the helmet on this time?" And he did.
Yeah. Carl Urban knew better.
Oh, man. Awesome. Yeah. So, when... Moving forward, are you looking to do anything as far as, like, publishing out to Diamond distributors so that you can get your books in stores? Can stores pick up mass quantities of your books through the indie publishing website?
There's a discount at five copies, you get a discount. So like for stores that want to order like 5 to 10 copies, they're definitely getting it at a cheaper rate so they can make a little more profit off of it. Diamond, I'm interested in maybe pitching through Diamond. I know you have to like pitch to them that they approve of your shit, even like that they're like, this is a brand that we respect enough, well enough that we put their shit out. But then after that, then you just go on a list like with like, you know, a link to your samples or whatever, but that stores have to decide when they see a title if they're going to get it. Being picked up by Diamond doesn't put you in stores automatically. Comic book is a hustle. Comic books are such a hustle. And I think appearing on podcasts and like reaching out to audiences and saying like, hey, I'm here, I make books, look at one of them, two of them for free, maybe you'll want to go pick up one or two of them for a dollar or two too. I think that it's a better approach to go do 1,000 podcasts. I might do the Night Diamond thing too, but I think I'm better off out here in Cyberlane talking to people than just being on that Diamond list, because I think there's like fucking 5,000 titles on that every month that people have to pick from, you know? They haven't heard of me some other way. They're not necessarily going to tick that box to pick up 5 copies of it and put it on your shelf.
That's something we talk about all the time on the show. There's so much out there, but you may not ever find it. You may not ever see it. Everything, music, small films, comic books, books. It's an embarrassment to riches, but nevertheless, it's hard to find. A lot of the stuff that we found was people like you coming on the show and talking. I said, wait, where's this been all my life?
Been all over the United States. Maybe another country or two.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, the network of creators that you have, that you're working with. I mean, that's something that I think is absolutely what we need in the industry, is more indie groups with a vast array of creators worldwide, really getting themselves out there, writers, artists, everybody. So, you know, I can't stress enough how much I just love what you're doing as far as that goes, because it's you're pulling from so many different places to find these great writers and artists and working with them, and that's beautiful to me. It really is.
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys.
All right. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I want to make sure that everybody got to see my super rad fucking What If t-shirt.
So nice.
Pick up the What If t-shirt. Yeah. They have it up Five Below.
Really?
Oh.
Yep. $5 t-shirt.
Is that from the TV show?
Yeah.
I've never watched the show. I've just read the comic.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it is neat.
Nice.
With a watcher.
So are you
watching?
Don's trying to close the show, and I'm like,
keep going. I thought everybody's finished.
And everything as well.
What's that?
Are you watching like the Marvel Cinematics and everything?
I also used to do TV blogging, and I mostly covered comic book or sci-fi shows. So, what am I watching now? I watch Equalizer with Queen Latifah. That shit is awesome.
Yeah.
But comic book shows right now, The Flash. I'm waiting for The Flash tonight. I'll definitely watch the new Flash. I'm kind of on the edge of my seat. Will they, won't they cancel Legends? Because I really need a Legends season 8. So let's hope that happens. They left it on like the cliffhanger with Booster Gold, and I'm like, no, I need a season 8. This is non-negotiable. I need a season 8. Like, what else am I watching that are comic books now? I don't know. I watch Snowpiercer at the moment. Snowpiercer's pretty decent.
I've been trying to get my hands on more copies of the English translation of the comic books from Snowpiercer.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, they're kind of hard to find, actually. Amazon has them, but for ridiculously overpriced.
Mm. Damn.
Yeah. So, are you looking forward to Multiverse of Madness?
Oh, with Doctor Strange? Yeah. And I think it involves the evil Doctor Strange. Here he is.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the characters in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm confident he is too, and there's little bits I've noticed that we might get Agent Carter or Captain Carter, actually.
Her? That version of her as, like, the Captain Britain as lady?
Yep.
That's awesome!
Go back to a closer look at the poster, and you'll notice in one of the shards, her shield is there.
That would be really cool. Oh, wow. I know that also Scarlet Witch is in it. Like, she's a definite person.
Yeah.
I'm definitely down for that. I don't go to the theaters anymore, so I wait for like the good version to be uploaded to the site that I use. So
I know what you mean. I can't do theaters. I mean, in this day and age, it's like I have a giant TV and a surround sound system. Just stream it to me already.
We're watching The Adam Project tonight. Wednesday nights here at the house that I stay at is called Loki Night, and it goes back to when Loki was on Wednesday nights. And basically, it's every Wednesday night, a couple of friends come over, and we watch comic book, or it was Mandalorian, or Boba Fett for a while. It was Hawkeye. You know, it's whatever coming on at that point in the Disney Plus schedule. But tonight, we're actually going to watch The Adam Project, which is Ryan Reynolds and Mark Ruffalo in a Netflix movie that just dropped.
Yes.
Yeah, I watched it already, but everyone else hasn't. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I haven't watched it myself. All I was told was prepare to cry.
It is a little sad, but it's also hilarious. I mean, with time travel movies where people are resolving themselves out of time and stuff like that, yeah, there's a tragic element. But that may mean they succeeded though. So who knows? There's a yin yang going on there.
Awesome. All right. So, in closing, where can everybody find you across the internets?
I would say just come find us at 123 Go Publications on either. We have an Instagram that I never use. And then there's DB123Go on Instagram that I use a little bit. And then 123 Go Publications on Facebook. On Twitter, go follow Jeff at like Moloch Reigns, or it might be like J Haas Interviews or something like that. I don't know what his regular one is. A lot of our other artists are there on Instagram and or Twitter. If you're on Instagram, add the Vikings one. It's Vikings_saga_of_the_north. And if you add that one, that's probably going to be our next big Kickstarter project that we're going to work on. So it's in the editing phase. He's put up a lot of pictures, both of that's Jose Diaz. He's from Guatemala. He's the artist and the originator of this idea. And we've got his friend Douglas, who's in Germany but also from Guatemala, I believe. That Douglas is in Germany and is like in a metal band and runs a nightclub or something, but he's also he's an academic expert in Vikings, so he is our expert in and script writer for a lot of the first issue. And I'm in the process right now of editing what Douglas wrote and rearranging pages a little bit, and I'm also going to be giving Jose some new pages that he's going to have to draw to sort of flesh out that narrative arc that I said I wanted to make sure that this book got. So add him and you'll find a lot of fun stuff on his Instagram. Thank you so much for having me. You guys are awesome. 123 Go, find our books at indieplanet.com/123Go. And yeah, I don't know.
And everybody listening, of course, this stuff is going to be on the blog for you guys to check out as well. Don, you got anything at the moment?
We like to use fake comic book covers on the Facebook page and the Facebook group. If you'd like to do one, we can't pay you for it, but we will add it to the blog if you will allow us. People enjoy them. And even though we didn't have a music break today, we usually do. If you're any kind of performer, singer, rapper, musician, we would probably even take a piece by a mime, as long as you have something recorded. We can add it to the music break. It's all on the Contact Us page on the blog. That's all I got.
All right, guys, check out, you can buy our t-shirts, you can find those on the website. Any of that helps us keep going. You've got Facebook group, all kinds of ways to talk to us, chat with us, hang out with us. Until next time.
Read
more
comics.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.